You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
We were out for a walk with my husband's dogs this weekend. Well, actually, one of them belongs to my husband. The other belongs to my husband's boyfriend. It's complicated. We're complicated. Dogs aren't. They like to go for walks. So do gay men. We were made for each other. Anyway, we left the house before it got dark. And by the time we were coming home, it was dark. And we had two options. Stay on the street, aka the long way home, or head through the park, aka the shortcut. We took the shortcut. The park near our house is kind of notorious. Volunteer Park is in what was once Seattle's wealthiest neighborhood, a street nicknamed Millionaire's Row, dead ends in the park. There's a lovely little art museum, Seattle Asian Art Museum, a famous sculpture, a big marble sphinctery thing called Black Hole Sun. But it's not the museum or that one particular hole that made Volunteer Park notorious. It's the zombies, the dick zombies. Dick zombies are like regular zombies in some ways, your classic movie zombies, your shuffling zombies, the kind of zombies you can get away from if you just keep moving. But dick zombies don't want to eat your brains. They want to eat your dicks. Dicks, delicious dicks. Dick zombies, or guys who have sex in parks after dark, are the reason Seattle parks are closed at night. All of them. 25 years ago, the city shut all the parks down after 10 p.m. in order to keep the dick zombies out of one park. And it didn't work. For half the year, it gets dark in Seattle after 4 p.m. Closing the parks after 10 p.m.? Yeah, no, the dick zombies are still there, waiting behind trees, in the dark, hungry for dicks. Well, I've never been tempted. I do like knowing the dick zombies are there. It says something about the triumph of the human spirit, or maybe the irresistibility of dick, or both. But I was surprised when a dick zombie stepped out from behind a tree in the dark the other night. I almost had a heart attack, scared me to death. Then we saw another and another. And I don't know why I thought the dick zombies would be at home, but I did. So my guard was down, which is why I let out a little scream when the first dick zombie shuffled out from behind a tree in the near pitch blackness. Needless to say, for a dick zombie, a scream kind of kills the mood. Dick zombies prefer to conduct their dick zombie business in silence. They don't want to draw attention to themselves, just dicks. I was equal parts comforted and alarmed. It was similar to the comfort I felt when the cherry tree in our front yard exploded into bloom. Hey, life goes on! But the alarm I feel when someone who isn't wearing a face mask squeezes past me in the supermarket. Dude, what the fuck are you doing? I wanted to shout, hey, you guys, this isn't okay. While at the same time pausing to recognize my privilege, toilet paper, canned soups, dicks were stocked up. And I understand there's only so long people, human beings, can go without contact or sex. And hey, maybe if a particular dick zombie was practicing social distancing and living alone and working from home and having all their groceries delivered, it would be safe for that particular dick zombie to meet up with another dick zombie who was doing all those same things. But failing that, yeah, this is not okay. It's not safe. You can't maintain a safe social distance. You can't stay 6 feet away from someone while you're eating their dick. That said, I think we all recognize that this can't go on forever. We're going to have to figure out sex in our new reality. But we haven't figured it out yet. But for now, dick zombies, and I say this as a fan, an admirer, don't eat the dicks. Maybe stand 6 to 10 feet away from each other and jack those dicks off. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, Diana from Studio Friction joins us to talk about creating kink communities. And on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as much show, more guests, no ads, Joellen Noddy joins us to talk about her new book, The Monster Under the Bed, about introversion, depression, sex, romance, everything. All that coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Helix Sleep, the best mattress for your individualized comfort. Right now, my listeners get up to $200 off all mattress orders at helixsleep.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is sponsored by OMG Yes, a website where you explore the latest science about women's sexual pleasure through fun, honest videos. Get more understanding, more pleasure, and more tools for an even happier relationship. Get a discount on newly released season 2 at omgyes.com/savage. That's omgyes.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Pill Club, the birth control subscription that's delivered right to your door. Get a special care package with your first delivery. Go to thepillclub.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling with a quarantine sex story. The other day, my boyfriend and I were both rock climbers, and in our state, we're allowed to recreate outside, and there's a climbing area very close to our houses that nobody ever climbs at except us. And so we headed out there and to do some climbing, and it got too hot to climb. And so he started kissing me and took off my climbing harness and then took off my clothes. And then he puts my climbing harness back on. So, and then he proceeds to suspend me. And then he went down on me, and then we had sex like that. And it was pretty fun and wild and really beautiful out in nature. And this climbing area is pretty special to us because we recently put up a new climb out there and named it Quarantine in honor of the term that I believe you coined and the fact that we are now Quarantines. So thanks for the inspiration.
Thank you so much for sharing. And I don't mean to be pedantic during a pandemic, but if you were suspended, didn't he technically go up on you? We're looking for your quarantine sex stories to start the show every week, literally with a bang. If you have a good quarantine sex story, give us a call, 206-302-2064, and share it, and we may open next week's show with yours.
Hi, Dan. I'm a straight woman in my mid-30s living in a big city on the East Coast. A few months ago, I ended a 2.5-year relationship. During the time I was in that relationship, I was introduced to a guy who recently moved to my city as a work contact. I had met him in person a number of times, always in a professional and friendly context. I thought he was cute and we seemed to have a lot in common, but since I wasn't available, I didn't think more of it. Since my breakup, I've been thinking about him a lot more. We've been in touch more often in the past couple of months in a friendly way, and we even went out to dinner together. It was a nice restaurant on a Friday night, but it still had more of a friend, not date vibe to it. I'm interested in seeing if there's potential for a romantic relationship to come out of this. I know that he's looking for a serious relationship for himself, and I also know that since he moved to my city, he hasn't been active with dating, only going out with two women. I think he's a bit shy and just not a fan of dating apps. So the fact that he never asked me out could either be that he's not interested and only sees me as a friend, or he might be interested in me, but is just not the type to make a move. I'm not sure. I'd love your advice on two things. First, how do I ask him out in a way that doesn't put him on the spot, isn't awkward if he's not interested, and doesn't affect our friendship? Honestly, I'll be totally fine if he isn't interested, and I'm happy to just be friends, and I want to make sure he knows that. Second thing is that during this time of quarantining, I obviously don't know when I will be able to see him in person again. So is this the right time to let him know that I'm interested in potentially dating, which I guess would mean going on virtual dates? Or should I be patient and wait for the social distancing to be behind us and in the meantime continue just chatting as friends?
You wonder why he never asked you out, but you already sort of know why he never asked you out, if indeed he's interested in you in that way or potentially interested in you in that way. When you first got to know each other, you were involved. Only a couple of months ago did you break up with your ex, and maybe he didn't want to feel like he was swooping in, and now we're all in quarantine and everything's kind of called off or on hold. You should definitely ask him out. The awkwardness that you're worried about, the rejection, the potential rejection, there's always a potential acceptance, but the potential rejection you're worried about, yeah, you just have to brace yourself for that. You have to lean into it. You have to acknowledge the awkwardness. Tell him you've always been attracted to him. You kept it friendly and you kept it professional because he was a work contact and you were involved with somebody else. But now that you're not, you're interested in knowing whether or not he might be interested in getting to know you that way, getting to know you romantically, going out to dinner next time when going out to dinner is a thing, and making it a date. And see what he says. Worst case scenario, he says, no, oh, I'm so sorry. I don't think of you that way. You've misread my signals. You apologize to him for having misread him. And then you say, I hope this doesn't negatively impact our friendship. It's going to be a little bit awkward at first, but we will burn through the awkwardness and keep this friendship. Because it was the friendship that, of course, initially led to me feeling attracted to you. And so I obviously value that friendship. And I promise I won't be trying in the future to upgrade friendship to romance if the answer's no. But the answer might be yes. And why not now? If you hang back now because we're in quarantine and you want to wait till this is over, it could be a very fucking long time before this is over. And during that very fucking long time until this ends, somebody else might be just about to ask him out. Somebody he may be less interested in, but by the time you get around to asking him out, he could be involved with. And then unable to give you the yes you're hoping to get. Ask him out. Go on virtual dates now. When they begin to lift the social distancing restrictions, maybe then you can go on some actual dates. But at the very least, you'll both have something to look forward to. You deserve a comfortable mattress. You want to sleep right, particularly now. And if you're lucky enough to be having sex right now, you really want to have the best possible mattress to get sex done right. Now imagine having the perfect mattress for you delivered to your home safely with no contact. That mattress is a Helix mattress, and it's what Terry and I sleep on every night. And sometimes we do other stuff on it too. Helix Sleep has a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. If you like a mattress that's really soft or firm, if you sleep on your side or your back or your stomach, if you sleep really hot, if you're one of those people who heats up at night, with Helix, there's a specific mattress for each and everybody's unique taste, body type, and heat index. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress of 2019 by GQ and Wired magazine, and you just have to order one to know why. Helix also designs their mattresses with sex in mind. All of their mattresses are hybrids, meaning they have both foam and springs in them, unlike many other companies. And having springs in your mattress rather than just foam keeps you from sinking in too much and gives you the perfect level of bounce and leverage you need to get it on that mattress. Their high-quality springs are incredibly quiet and won't sag even during your most athletic non-sleeping activities. Helix mattresses also have strong edge support thanks to their reinforced coil perimeter to keep things stable, so you never have to worry about rolling off the bed no matter what you're doing on it. Terry and I ordered ourselves the Midnight Lux Helix mattress because we wanted something that felt firm. And when we do sleep, we move around a little at night, and that's what worked for us. Helix Mattress has a mattress that will work for you, however it is you're moving around at night. Go to helixsleep.com/savage, take their 2-minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out. Their mattress, you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but they're not going to need to do that because you are going to love it. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders for our listeners at helixsleep.com/savage. Get yourself a great new mattress. Support the show. Go to helixsleep.com/savage for up to $200 off.
Hi, Dan. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller from Italy. I'm 24 years old and I've been with my boyfriend, who's 29, for almost 2 years. Our sex and communication are great. We always talk about our sex life and how we feel and what we've enjoyed, and there's really nothing we can't discuss. Except for one thing. We both love anal, me being on the receiving end. And a couple of months ago, we started jokingly to talk about me penetrating his ass. He never really said no, and even started talking about it, always jokingly, mind you. I've always responded that I'm definitely not against it, and as a matter of fact, I've done it before. But then I would need him to guide me, and I would say quote-unquote teach me. Partly because that really turns me on, and because I honestly am not sure what to do with a finger up a man's ass. So one night, we had smoked pot, and we were fucking, and I proceeded to put a finger up his ass. He didn't stop me, but he also didn't say anything. So me, being a little insecure, I took my finger out and we continued as if nothing had happened. We didn't talk about it afterwards and haven't talked about it since. We're not in quarantine together, so my question is, how do I approach asking him whether he liked it or not? I feel maybe it's a shame, even if there's no need to be, and maybe a little bit embarrassed. Also, since we won't be together for God knows how long, because I live in the epicenter of the pandemic and he's in another state, should I maybe wait until we get together? And ultimately, what do you do inside a man's ass? I feel like my fingers are too small to even reach his prostate. Help me, Dan, and stay safe.
What do I do inside a man's ass? Well, having been inside a few men's butts in my time, there are nerve endings all around the asshole. It can be very pleasurable to have those nerve endings stroked or stimulated. You don't even have to penetrate someone to provide them with a little bit of anal pleasure. You run a lubey finger back and forth or around in circles on the outside of someone's anal sphincter. It feels pretty good. If you go inside, well, a dude has a prostate gland. If you are in front of him and you slip your middle finger up his ass, make the come toward me gesture. That's basically where the prostate gland is. As he becomes more aroused, you can feel it harden and rise before he ejaculates. So if you really want to know where the prostate is, if you want to have a little experimental session with some dude that you're penetrating digitally, just get your fingers in him, get one or two fingers in him, very lubed up with his consent. You do need to ask. You should ask someone before you stick a finger in their butt. And once you're in with his consent, once your fingers are up there, just very gently stroke your fingers in that come toward me gesture while he masturbates, and his prostate gland will identify itself to you. It will stand up and salute, and then you will know roughly where it is and how to pleasure it. It's just a very gentle kind of, you know, stroking pleasure. You're not trying to slap the prostate around. There's also a huge psychological component to being anally penetrated for many men. Men are supposed to be the penetrators, not the penetratees. Most gay and bi men get past that and enjoy penetration. But for a lot of straight guys, the shame of it, the inversion of roles and expectations, is part of the turn-on. The transgression is part of the turn-on. So I don't think you need to get him to a place necessarily where he's completely over his shame. You just need to get him to a place where the shame is contained and corralled in such a way that it is serving your erotic connection. But you got to be able to talk about it. You don't have to eradicate the shame just to be able to talk about it. Because you can talk about, like, part of what turns him on, if he can articulate it, is the wrongness of it, the delicious wrongness of it. It's not just people who are into having their butts played with who get to enjoy that delicious wrongness feel. As we've often said, like, most kinks at bottom are about some sort of power exchange, some sort of power play. But a lot of them, I think, concurrently, a twin root is really this idea of how wrong this is, how deliciously wrong, how naughty, how transgressive. But you got to get him to talk about it. And you have a great opener. Remember that time, honey, I put my finger in your butt? We've never talked about it. Can we talk about it? I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it? I might like to do it again. We've joked about pegging. A lot of people will raise a sexual interest that's a little naughty or transgressive by framing it as something they're just joking about, so that if their partner is offended or not into it or judgmental, they can say, I was just kidding. Obviously, he's not just kidding. Obviously, this is something that he would like to do. You're going to have to do what you did already that you've proven that you can do, which is use your words. You're very articulate. There's nothing judgy or shamey about your tone or your line of questioning. You just need to take all of those things that you said to me and those questions you asked me and put them to him and ask them of him. And when it comes to anal penetration, baby steps. You're not going to go from one very wet finger slipped into a butt to slamming in and out of him with a strap-on dildo in 10 minutes. You're really going to have to ramp it up. I would suggest, you know, when you guys can get back together, that keep playing with your fingers, maybe enjoy a little bit of a rimming, and then get him a butt plug, butt plugs are great intermediate sex toys, particularly for straight guys who may be wrestling with shame or the transgressiveness of it all, because it doesn't look like a dick and you can get it into your ass and then leave it there and he can go back to doing all of the straight guy things during sex, you know, eating your pussy, getting his dick sucked, fucking you, while the butt plug just sits there in his ass, lurking in wait, ready for that moment that he comes while he's doing the straight guy thing and fucking his girlfriend's pussy. And the minute he comes, his anal sphincters begin to contract, the prostate hardens and rises, and this contraction of the anal sphincters, which is part of what helps slam all the ejaculate out of his body, is going to move that butt plug gently back and forth across his prostate. It can be mind-blowing. But to get there, you're going to have a conversation with him about it. You say the sex is great, I believe you. You say the communication is great, okay, I believe you up to a point. But if you can't talk about his butt, particularly after you have digitally penetrated, after all these jokes about pegging, your communication is incomplete. So use your words. And this is a great time to get on the phone and use your words, because what else do we have to do? OMGS.com is a website devoted to sexual pleasure. In partnership with Indiana University and Kinsey Institute researchers, they asked tens of thousands of women, what was the one discovery you've made that really made your pleasure better? Then they found the patterns in those discoveries, the physical techniques, psychological techniques, the ways of guiding partners. And they distilled all those discoveries down, put them on a website, omgyes.com. The discoveries are brought to life as videos, animation, data visualizations, and a whole lexicon of what feels good and what works. OMGS really is a binge with benefits. Most entertainment, like shows and watching videos online, doesn't really leave you better off than before you watched it. Most online education feels like work. But OMGS is something bingeable. OMGS is itself a pleasure that you want to keep watching and watching, but it's nutritious. It's good for you. It's good for your life and your mind and your relationships. A study out of IU School of Medicine found that 1 month after watching OMGS, people had more words for what they find pleasurable, more confidence guiding their partners, pleasure experiences that felt physically new, more relationship closeness outside the bedroom, and more body positivity. This shelter-in-place time, really the perfect opportunity to learn and explore your or your partner's pleasure. See a sample at omgyes.com/savage, and listeners of the Lovecast also get a discount at omgyes.com/savage.
Hello, Dan. This is a long-time reader and long-time listener, and I must say that your podcast was what got me through hospicing my mother, actually. So anyway, I am sheltering in place with my partner of 35 years, and we've raised a couple of kids, and we have a great relationship. We've always had a very high libido, and since the kids are off on their own, empty nesters and all that, we've really gotten our kink on. And thanks to you, I've been open to all the things that I'm interested in. It's kind of shocking, actually, that I am, what did they say, kinky as fuck. Anyway, we're having a marvelous time. Just before the pandemic broke and the shelter-at-home place was ordered, we moved from a small apartment with paper-thin walls into a standalone home with a backyard and nice solid walls and even a guest room. So we've got plenty of places to play and plenty of time and space and privacy to do so. So this is actually both a check-in from Quarantine Love Tales. It's also a question. So it turns out that I'm a switch, but my husband's a dom and we're having a great time. The question becomes, when I am fully bound and also gagged, how can I communicate things such as safety words to my partner? I looked online, they said, you know, use a horn or some such or a bell. I think a bell would get lost in the ruckus, actually. And I believe a horn just is, it's just tone deaf to what's happening in the room.
You're very welcome. I'm very sorry about the passing of your mother. My heart goes out to you. All my sympathy. This is an easy one to solve. You know, if you've been with somebody for 35 years, you're probably pretty good at reading each other's moods and each other's body language. A lot of the advice about a safe gesture or something that you can do if you're bound and gagged presumes you're with someone that doesn't know you well and you're with someone that you don't know well, but you trust them enough to make you as helpless as that. And the advice typically, I mean, a horn would be ridiculous, a little something like a ball you squeeze that makes a honking sound. Who wants to tie up Harpo Marx? 80-year-old pop culture reference for the kids. Not sexy, not fun. Instead, what people typically do is some sort of grunt pattern, an real quick, means I'm safe wording, or you give the sub something to hold in their hand. Maybe they're restrained, they're tied up, but they have the use of their hands. Their fingers and palms are free. And if the sub has a ball in their hand, then they hold on to it. If they drop the ball, that's safe wording. Seems to me that unless you are the kind of kink sub, BDSM sub, who likes to struggle, who likes to look unhappy, who likes to perform, no, 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 please don't, please stop, that you wouldn't necessarily need the ball or the grunt grunt or the gesture, sometimes just shaking one leg or shaking one arm. But if you do, if that's the kind of play you and your husband after 35 years together are getting into, and I think that's so wonderful, and what a great example to other callers, particularly callers, couples who are parents, you have small children in the home, you're stressed out, your sex life is a little rote, there's a lot of maintenance sex and not a lot of passion, hang in there. It could come roaring back. Most people you meet in organized swinging, for example, are parents with grown children who are just getting into it. And obviously, this caller, 35 years together, two grown children, and kinky as fuck, as the kids say. So if you like to struggle, if you like to look like you're miserable while your husband's doming you, get a ball, agree on a grunt pattern or a gesture. That's your safe word. Thank you for calling. And really happy to hear from a couple that's been together as long as you two have, still exploring, doing new things, really killing it. It's a good problem to have, your problem. Most of the couples we hear from are having not so great problems to have. Always refreshing to hear from a couple that's having the opposite problem, the good problem. You need to renew your birth control prescription? Want to switch up your birth control? Maybe try birth control for the first time? If you know what you want, or even if you don't know where to start, Pill Club has your back. Pill Club is a birth control subscription that is delivered straight to your door. Most prescriptions are free with insurance or Medicaid. It can be as low as $3.99 per month without. Shipping is always free and discreet, and Pill Club schedules deliveries so you always have your next dose on hand before you need it. So skip the office visit, skip the line at the pharmacy, and join the club. And right now, our listeners who go to thepillclub.com/savage get a new way to get birth control and special care packages with every delivery. That's thepillclub.com/savage to get your first birth control care package. Remember, thepillclub.com/savage.
Hey, Dan, I am a straight male college student in my early 20s. And I have a question about starting a relationship with a particular person. I have a close friend that I have some mutual attraction with. We've both talked a lot about the fact that we're attracted to each other. We've even made out a couple times at parties after having a couple drinks. But there's one particular problem, and that's that she is very religious and not interested in having sex until she's married. Now, I want to preface this by saying that she's in no way a prudish or sex negative person when it comes to other people. We have a lot of mutual friends who are openly poly and openly LGBTQ and openly kinky, and she's never been judgmental of them, and she even very frequently jokes with our friends about the people they've fucked and people she'd like to fuck. So there's no real sexual negativity I've seen from her. When I've asked her about it, her answer has always been that she believes the Bible calls her, you know, not to have sex before marriage, but she doesn't think it applies to anyone else who doesn't believe in it. The problem here is that I am interested in having sex regularly. I've had sex in all my previous relationships. And I don't know how ethical it is to go into this relationship with the hope that eventually she will be willing to have sex before marriage. I wouldn't be comfortable being in this relationship for more than probably 6 or 9 months without eventually having sex. And because of her general sex positivity for people outside of herself, I don't think it's unreasonable to assume that she could become comfortable with that possibility. In fact, we have a very close mutual friend who was raised conservative Muslim and didn't drink or smoke or have sex until she got a boyfriend who did all those things, and now she does all those things too. So I'm just on the fence. Is it ethical to go to try and start a relationship with this person who I feel a really strong emotional and physical connection to, with the knowledge that if after 3 months or 6 months or 9 months she's still not willing to have sex before marriage, I don't feel comfortable staying in that relationship any longer?
You're an adult. You have certain things that you want out of a relationship, certain expectations that seem perfectly reasonable to me that you might place on a romantic partner. She's an adult. If you inform her about what your expectations would be, what your needs would be from a romantic partner, and she chooses to get involved with you, well, then she's an adult. She gets to make her own choices. You don't want to put her in a position where she's become so emotionally involved or attached to you that she winds up doing something that she at that point doesn't want to do, but it's the only way to keep you in her life is to concede that and fuck you in violation of whatever it was that she read in her Bible that was written in lemon juice for her just by God and she had to hold up to a candle. I don't know what it is that she's reading that allows for her to smile on polyamorous relationships and all of her sex positive, sexually active friends, but tells her she can't. But whatever, that's her own personal interpretation of Sky Daddy's orders for her. But she is an adult, and if she chooses to get involved with you, maybe that's a step she's taking toward letting that go. Also, when people say they're saving it for marriage, define it. Some people mean all of it. No kissing, even. The Duggars. Remember the Duggars? Kind of like the Duggars. No kissing, no hand-holding, just sitting next to each other. They're saving all of it. Some people have a much narrower definition of what it is that they are saving, what it is. Some people who are saving it have oral sex, they engage in mutual masturbation, they engage in anal intercourse. All they're saving is vaginal penetration, is PIV, saving that for their husband, for their wedding night, because in their own personal copy of the Bible with the page written in lemon juice just for them by God in secret that they held up to a candle, that's what they're supposed to be doing. That's what God told them to do. So you might want a little bit more clarity from her about what she means by it when she says saving it. You might be more comfortable in that relationship if PIV is great and you love it, but all these other kinds of sex are just as rewarding. And I think the broader your definition of sex, the more all-encompassing it is, the better of a sex life you're going to have. And maybe you could have that kind of a sex life with her, and even in the absence of PIV intercourse. But you're right. There is an ethical issue here. You don't want to back her into a position where she feels obligated, where she ends up having sex with you to keep you sex she didn't want to have. But if after 6 or 9 months she agrees to have sex with you and that is the only reason that she's doing it, because you guys are going to continue to talk about this, at that point you can choose not to have sex with her, however it is you two are defining sex.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 21-year-old bisexual female currently living in the Midwest, but I'll be moving to a smallish town in New England once I graduate, which will be in the next couple months. I'm really excited, once we're done socially distancing, to begin to find and build my sex-positive kinky community. I've played a bit with rope in the past, and there's so much more I want to explore. But I have a few questions. First and foremost, I'm looking for your advice on how to go about this in the safest way possible. The guy who first introduced me to rope was so incredible, just truly the best guy. But I know that people can be shitty, and I'm wary of being taken advantage of, especially as a young female who's very new to the scene. I've been put in uncomfortable situations before. I would ask friends to accompany me to clubs or events, but I don't have friends who are interested in or are really comfortable with kink. They're great, but it's just not their thing. Oh, and also, how do you find these events? I met the guy on an app, but I haven't been so lucky since. I know FetLife is a thing, but I've been a bit overwhelmed trying to navigate those message boards before, and it's hard to tell what's legitimate.
Joining me by phone to help tackle this question, Diana, a founding member and manager of Studio Friction, a rope-centric community space in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Diana, how are you?
I'm doing well, Dan. How are you?
Really good. Before we get to the specifics of the caller's question, because I think it's instructive, can you tell us how Studio Friction came to be. You created, you helped found, I think, the kind of kink community that the caller is looking for. How did you do that?
Yeah, so Studio Fiction was kind of born out of a need. Denver Rope Bite was created, I think, 7 years ago. And we were initially at the Denver Sanctuary, and we just totally outgrew the space. And so me and two of my friends decided, like, let's dive in and see what we can make. We wanted to make a community space that kind of took the pressure off of, like, going to a dungeon, which can be kind of scary, and had events that were less, like, kink pressured and more like, let's get to know each other, welcome to the community.
So it's sort of, you know, people talk about munches, which are these sort of informal coffee clutches for kinksters where you get together at a time where there's no play. It's not a play party. It's more, you know, getting to know each other and informational and, you know, to help people, you know, to make their first contact with the kink community. It almost sounds like you've mixed that, you know, Denver Sanctuary kind of play space with the munch and integrated them at Studio Fiction.
We definitely have. We have an event every other Sunday, or we were having an event every other Sunday called Sunday Dinner, where we would get together and basically just throw a potluck for everybody to come and meet and talk. And you could practice your rope if you wanted to, but you didn't have to. And it is my favorite event that we host. And now during social distancing, we're going to try and do it virtually and have an instructor teach cooking, and then we can just hang out and chat. So we'll see how that goes.
So here's the caller, you know, she's graduating. She's had a really great first kink experience with someone. And she wants to get out there and create her own community. It seems to me that if kink is really important to her and this kind of play is really important to her, that she might want to prioritize moving to a place like Denver where the community is established, where she doesn't have to create it from scratch.
Absolutely. I think it's a privilege that we have here in Denver, that we have such a great community and so many wonderful volunteers that help make it happen. And I also understand, like, living in a small town where maybe that's just not an option.
And that's how you make friends in the kink scene. She's a kinky. She's had a great first experience. None of her friends, you know, she would feel comfortable going with her to a kink event, or she would feel comfortable going with them to a kink event. You know, that can make you feel self-conscious. If you feel like a, you know, vanilla friend is chaperoning you, you want to be with somebody who's got the same kind of kinky baseline. But the way to find those people is to get into the kink scene. It's sort of, she doesn't feel comfortable entering the kink scene because she's got no friends there. But the friends that she needs to be comfortable in the kink scene are in the kink scene. And she's just going to have to push past that block and push herself outside of her comfort zone momentarily to make those friends and therefore then feel more comfortable in the kink spaces.
Absolutely. And I think a really important thing to remember is, like, everybody in the kink community was that person at some point in time that was terrified to get out, that was scared to go to their first event, that maybe didn't have friends that they could go with. And we all had to push through that barrier and just kind of finally get our toes wet.
You know, I really think that that's true. And sometimes there's this fear for the person who hasn't been to the kink events yet, who is the newbie, that the interest people might take in them when they go to that first kink event is just sexual and predatory. And what they don't know, because they haven't experienced it yet, but will once they enter a safe and responsible and caring kink community, is a lot of what they're going to get is empathy. That, oh, I was in your shoes once. Nobody's born into the kink scene. I was new and nervous just like you. What can I do to help set you at ease? And then you'll also meet people perhaps that you want to play with, who want to play with you, but you're going to meet a lot of people who want to help you get comfortable and make those contacts and be your friend. You know, people have it in their heads that the first time you go into a kink scene, you know, people are going to sneer at you if you don't know what you're doing, if you've never been, if you don't have the right gear. And it's really the opposite reaction. It's the same, you know, in some ways, I'm going to go off now. It's the same fear a lot of people have when they go to the gym for the first time, that the people who go to the gym all the time are going to judge them. And it's not true. If, you know, people go to the gym all the time might look at you because you're using the equipment wrong and they're worried for you and they don't know how to say something. Same thing on the kink scene. If you go in there and you don't know what you're doing, people are going to worry for you, but people aren't unhappy to see you.
100%. Nobody is unhappy to see anyone. And especially if you're doing something incorrectly in the kink scene, like, somebody's going to step in and say, like, hey, let's talk about how we can do this a little safer and things like that. I think some some really good examples of first events are those munches, especially for people under 35. TNG events or the Next Generation events are really great to kind of make you feel more comfortable with a group of people that are around your same age. Also, classes are fantastic network spots. Go to classes, even if you're maybe not interested in learning that topic. If you just show up, people are going to start noticing you, and they're going to start reaching out, and they're going to start wanting to know who you are.
Last question. One of the things that she raises, she had a great first experience. She knows, though, that there are shitty people out there. And, you know, it's not just kinky people who have to worry about shitty people taking advantage of them. But if your kinks really, you know, your sexual interests center around moments of complete helplessness, you're a little more concerned about winding up with somebody who's shitty or taking advantage or a monster. That is something that people can find in the kink scene. Not that there's no shitty people in the kink scene, but in an organized kink scene, people who reveal themselves to be shitty tend to be shown the door at some point, exiled.
In a way, yes.
And that's one of the functions of an organized kink scene. One of the things we want from an organized kink scene is that kind of accountability.
Absolutely.
So you still have to use your bullshit detectors. Just because somebody's at the munch or at the party doesn't mean they're a great person. But if they're a regular and they've been going to the munch or the party for a long time and you meet other people they played with who vouch for them, that all contributes to the, you know, the likelihood that this is a safe person to play with. The assurances that this person is going to be safe to play with you can find in the organized kink scene.
Yeah, and I like to tell new people all the time, like, find people that like to do what you do. And if you like to receive things or you're the bottom for things, find other bottoms to talk to about that. Or if you're a top, find other tops to talk to about that. Because the best people that are going to be the most knowledgeable about good partners are going to be people that have done those things.
Diana, founding member and manager of Studio Friction, Rope Centric Community Space in Denver. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Dan.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling for some advice on my relationship with one of my partners. I've been married to my husband for 10 years, and we have had an open relationship for the last 3. My issue is with my boyfriend, who I have been seeing for about a year and a half now. Until recently, I didn't care to know much about his other romantic relationships. I knew he was seeing at least one other person on a regular basis. This other woman is also married, but her husband does not know that she is seeing him. What concerns me about this is not the basic behavior. Knowing about the first woman was not a big problem for me, and I didn't feel it was my business anyway. Recently, though, he and I have opened up a little bit more about the other people that we are both seeing. I learned that he was seeing a few more women that were all married and all cheating on their spouses. What I'm concerned about is whether the fact that he's dating married women exclusively, 3 to 4 of whom are having affairs, speaks to his moral fiber, and frankly, whether he's the type of person I want to be spending my time with. Am I overreaching here, or does this pattern say something about him that I should be worried about? It's honestly turned me off of him a little bit, but is that unfair?
You know, sometimes people are really trapped in marriages that they can't get out of. Maybe they have kids who have special needs. Maybe there's economic interdependence. It's not always the wife who's economically dependent on the husband. Sometimes the husband's economically dependent on the wife. And sometimes there's a lot that's really wonderful about the marriage. These two are best friends. It's just kind of sexless, or the sex never worked. And that married person is, as I like to say, doing what they need to do to stay married and stay sane. And they are cheating because they tried to have the conversation about openness, or their partner is so insecure that they're not able to have that conversation, or their partner said no, even though their partner isn't interested in fucking them. Their partner won't give them permission to fuck anybody else. And so they cheat. And sometimes cheating is the least worst option. Sometimes being cheated on is actually in the best interest of the person who is being cheated on, whether they are capable of recognizing it or not. Their spouse gets out there, finds somebody regular and stable who isn't a threat. They get these needs met. They come home. They're happier and more content in their relationship because they don't have to live a sexless life, even if they are in a sexless marriage. I could see that being the case with one of your boyfriend's other girlfriends, but all of your boyfriend's other girlfriends. He's got four women he sees regularly who are married and cheating. It becomes less and less likely the more married cheating women he adds to his stable, becomes less and less likely that they're all doing what they need to do to stay married and stay sane. And it looks more like your boyfriend has a thing for married women who are cheating. He's obviously got a collection of married women who are cheating. You're the exception. You need to talk to your boyfriend about this. So many of my responses today are getting in the end to, you need to talk to the person that you're fucking about the fucking that you're doing or not doing, the fucking that they're doing with other fuckers. You need to talk to your boyfriend about this. If you're uncomfortable being with someone who seeks out married women who are cheating on their husbands without good reason, and, you know, four, it sounds like probably at least two of them are unlikely to have good reason. Is that something you're comfortable with? Obviously, it's not. That's why you called. You're not comfortable with it. If he fetishizes this kind of sex, sex with married women where someone is being betrayed, if that's part of the erotic frisson for your boyfriend, if that's something that he's seeking out and you aren't comfortable with that, that's a libido killer for you, well, then you may need to end things with your boyfriend. All right, before I get to your response calls, let's read some of your tweets. V. Verdur tweets, almost every time I type social distancing, I accidentally hit F instead of D, and oh man, social fistancing really makes your mind wander. Yeah, other F for D substitutions that can make the mind wander. We're going to go meet with the regional distributor to serve with fistinction. A welcome fistraction. There's been a disturbance in the force. I could go on, but the look on Nancy's face tells me I shouldn't. Jay Rochelle tweets, hey, at Fake Dan Savage, when you say you need a better word for vaginal secretions, allow me to suggest gruel, girl drool. The name has its own subreddit and everything. All right, well, if girl drool, gruel, G-R-O-O-L, has its own subreddit, who am I to argue with that? But your neologism has a homonym problem? Gruel, G-R-U-E-L? Two syllables defined by Merriam-Webster, the only dictionary with a decent drag name, as a thin porridge. Gruel entered the English language in the 14th century, according to Merriam-Webster. It's never used as a compliment. No one wants to be served gruel. So I'm just going to reject this one on behalf of the ladies out there. Out of hand, subreddit, be damned. And finally, Alicia Spear tweets, it's been 7 weeks since I listened to the Savage Lovecast because my anxiety has been through the roof during the pandemic. But I just listened to episode 705, and I feel like I'm coming home. Ugly tears. Thank you, Dan Savage and Nancy. You are welcome, Alicia, and it's great to have you back. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming episode of the Savage Lovecast, please be sure to use the hashtag #SavageLovecast, and now your response calls.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling in response to episode 705, where the woman called to say that her and her significant other would break up and get back together frequently. I'm a therapist and I do therapy with couples. And my rule for couples is that they are not allowed to say they are breaking up with each other unless they are actually breaking up with each other. It's a common thing and it's very toxic to a relationship. The only time you should be telling somebody that you're breaking up with them is if you're actually breaking up. If you're very frustrated with them, then tell them that you're frustrated, overwhelmed, angry, anxious, but no more breaking up and getting back together.
Hey, Dan. This is a response to the call in episode 705 about the trans lady on the scooter. I live in DC, and I recently found out about the existence of a trans woman here who identifies as a sissy princess. She's known for scooting around DC and harassing men for money. She then posts screenshots of her Venmo on social media, bragging about all of the money she gets from men, saying that she's a findom. I'm assuming that she's involving these men unconsentingly in her financial domination kink, much as she had with this woman. She also claims on her social media that she uses this money she gets from men to pay tribute to other femdoms, because she believes in female supremacy. When I heard the call, I immediately thought that this has to be the same woman, and I wanted to call in to give this woman a little bit more context around her experience and let her know that this lady on the scooter isn't an asshole only to women, but also to men.
Hey, Dan, I just heard you say that there was no synonyms for vaginal secretions, and I was immediately came to my head pussy juice, and then I couldn't get beyond that, but I went to the Urban Thesaurus and found a few more. Maiden oil. The flange batter, pussy liquor, pussy nectar, juice de vagine, milf juice, oh my goodness, pootie tang, pussy fountain, and I can't even say some of these. Okay. Thanks for the show. It's always fun. Take care of yourself in these times.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Better than calling, you can use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or comment and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. My Dirty Little Film Festival Hump is going to be streaming online from May 9th through June 12th, hosted by me. We got permission from the filmmakers to show their films online, and we'll have the 15th annual festival up and ready to view from the comfort of your living room, your bedroom, wherever you like to watch. I'll be there to introduce the show and then take you straight to all the great dirty movies in this year's Hump Fest. Go to humpfilmfest.com to watch the trailer, check out the lineup, and choose the date and time that works for you, including additional shows for Hump fans in Europe. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Joe Ellen Notte on Twitter at @JoeEllenNotte, N-O-T-T-E. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. And I'll be back at you next week for our installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading. Everybody, please stay safe.